This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And thank you very much, Roger. A good morning to you. Good morning to the world as we work our way through the world of agriculture today from, again, our studios in Scottsdale, Arizona. And if time allows a little bit later on, because I have received quite a few emails saying, okay, where are you? What's wrong with you? Why aren't we seeing you regularly on the TV show? And why aren't we hearing you regularly on WGN Radio? Well, I don't want to turn the program into a medical report on the Big O, but in light of the concern and the questions, and I appreciate all of that, we'll try to answer some of the questions that I've been getting this morning. But as I'm looking over the state wires this morning and looking at traffic, it reminds me that we are in a serious time of the year from a traffic standpoint in the rural part of the United States. There's a story this morning that came across my Reuters service talking about an accident. A man from Fisher, Illinois, killed and two others injured in a crash Thursday night in northwestern Champaign County, apparently caused by improper passing at an intersection. Ford County Coroner Rick Fleschner, who also plays drums in our band that we take around the country for Farm Progress Show and events like that. But he said Joshua Hohulan, 29, was pronounced dead Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City at 9:40 last night. Illinois State Police said his car was struck at 8:07 p.m. in the intersection of Illinois 47 and County Road 3200 North Fleschner. The site is about 2 miles northwest of Fisher and 9 miles north of Mahomet. But here's the point I want to make. Until we get the corn crop harvested across the Midwest, the visibility at blind rural intersections is not going to be good. And those very often are not stop sign intersections. And so people approach them probably at a higher rate of speed than they should, and they don't slow down enough to see if there's traffic coming on the intersection itself. And police said preliminary information is that Mr. Hohulan was driving south on 47, slowing to turn left on the road that we mentioned, another Levanique Ringo, 22. Another southbound motorist tried to pass a third southbound vehicle and collided with him in the intersection. So you have to slow down at these rural blind intersections until we get the corn crop harvested. We talk about this every year, that there are blind intersections. You can't see them when approaching at a normal speed. Certainly not at an excessive speed. And this is what happens. You get accidents at these blind intersections. So that's the one reminder that we'll pass along to you this morning in an attempt to save your life. And the other reminder that we'll pass along to you is the fact that you do have to slow down on rural roads this time of the year, because you just can't see intersecting vehicles at those intersections. And very often you'll come to an intersection, you'll come to a curve in the road, and you'll be behind a tractor and a grain wagon that's probably going 10, 15 miles an hour, and you're doing 65 miles an hour. It doesn't give you much time to slow down and prepare yourself what's ahead of you. So All I'm saying is there are so many areas of danger in rural communities this time of the year, and slow down and be careful. Another story this morning of a near fatality from a grain bin venture. We talk a great deal about going into grain bins this time of the year with nobody else around. Dangerous, because you can get into a grain bin and that grain can start moving and it will suck you down into the grain bin and you'll suffocate in a matter of a minute. So please do not go into manure lagoons without somebody there with you. Do not go into grain bins without somebody there with you, so that if you do run into a problem, you're going to have somebody who can go and get help. So I guess that's enough of the safety advice this morning, but every year at harvest time, when there's a lot of slow-moving equipment on rural roads and at planting time, when the same thing happens, we do have to pass along these reminders that you're not out there alone and you've got to be careful. It's 11 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and we're going to be talking to Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services, a little bit later on the program this morning, as we try to figure out what's going to happen with the market activity. Been quite a week in the marketplace, not only on Wall Street, but also in the commodity world. And particularly, we're talking trade wars in Washington and talking the possibility of a war between big oil and big corn. And so there's a lot going on in the marketplace that really you can't control, but it's certainly having an impact on what's happening. President Trump, for example, this week, a couple of things that has really put Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue on alert, because the secretary traveling to various parts of the country this week and trying to tone down the rhetoric on the biofuel talks that the president is having. And I can imagine that if you're a cabinet officer, particularly if you're Secretary of Agriculture, wanting to see corn and soybeans used as much as possible in the energy program here in the United States, some of the activity yesterday and some of the rhetoric on Washington, Capitol Hill, did raise a lot of concern. And Secretary Perdue was in Anaheim, California, for the Commodity Classic this week. And according to a recording heard by Reuters, he said, "I can tell you that Trump stands with corn farmers, with biofuel farmers, and the RFS. And he was heard to say, I stand with him and I stand with you. He said, reports the administration does not support the renewable fuel standard, he said, are fake news. I have not, will not diminish demand for ethanol or hurt the RFS. And a spokesman for the U.S. Department of Agriculture confirmed that Perdue did make the comments. But I can imagine it's a little touchy right now sitting in some of those cabinet meetings with the talk of trade wars going on, and with the talk of corn wars and oil wars underway. I can imagine the job as Secretary of Agriculture can be challenging. Well, we're going to talk about some people who were honored this week in the world of agriculture. Anaheim, California, for example, Commodity Classic. And there are some honor programs that are coming up that we want to talk about, because one of them involves our own Max Armstrong. And that is the Master Farmer Program, started back in 1925 by Prairie Farmer magazine. But we'll get to all of that a little bit later when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 18 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning. And going back to the year 1925, can I take you historically back to 1925? The main magazine that farmers were reading in the Midwest, the magazine called Prairie Farmer. That was the original, and then it expanded into the Iowa Farmer and the Hoosier Farmer, and but all under the Farm Progress title. And back in 1925, Clifford Gregory, who was the publisher of Prairie Farmer and the editor of Prairie Farmer magazine, established the Master Farmer Program. It was established by Prairie Farmer, and every year since 1925, they have been honoring outstanding farm families in the state. They do it in several other states as well now, but they have announced this year's class of Master Farmers, and there's a familiar name on there, friends, Max Armstrong. And Max is in for a special honor on the program because they have established an honorary Master Farmer in the ranks of the Master Farmer program. So they announced about a week ago four Illinois farmers who have been selected as 2018 Master Farmers by Prairie Farmer magazine. And the group will be honored for their exceptional agricultural production skills and community service at a ceremony in Springfield on Wednesday, March 14. The award recipients: Tom Martin, Mount Pulaski; Jim Rapp, Princeton; Fred Reichert, Auburn; and Daryl Sarf of Chandlerville. And they will be the four honored, but there's one more. Prairie Farmer has also named a new honorary Master Farmer this year. His name, Max Armstrong. Max has originated broadcasts from 30 countries and every state in the United States for WGN, This Week in Agribusiness Television, and Farm Progress. And he is the first honorary Master Farmer to be named since 2010. Only 15 honorary Master Farmers have ever been named by the magazine. So anyway, I've gotten to know many of them over the years, and this year's class, nominated by farmers, agribusiness leaders, and farm organizations from throughout the state of Illinois. Judges for the awards were Karen Corrigan, McGillicuddy, Corrigan Agronomics, Linnea Kustra, who you heard on the program a week ago and 2 weeks ago here on Saturday Morning Show. And she was a 2011 Master Farmer. And then Ed McMillan, who was chairman of the Board of Trustees of the University of Illinois. And in addition to that, Steve Myers, Busey Ag Services, and Holly Spangler, Prairie Farmer editor. Had a long conversation with Holly on the phone about the fact that Max would be coming in as the first honorary Master Farmer in the past several years that they have named an honorary Master Farmer. But really is quite an honor, and it was established at the time in 1925 by the editor to bring recognition that farmers who were doing a good job with soil conservation, water conservation, adapting technologies to increase the productivity of the land, to increase production, and to increase yields, all of that up to that point in 1925 really weren't being recognized for what they had contributed to the world of agriculture. Let me see if I can get some of the quotes that Holly has carried in her story on this year's Master Farmers. Tom Martin, Mount Pulaski, Illinois. always looking for his next project. He said, I love what I've done, but I'm looking ahead at the next 30 years. And he manages Martin Agricultural Enterprises, a 2,700-acre corn, soybean, wheat, hay, and straw farming operation with his 25-year-old son, Chris. Tom's wife of 35 years, Cheryl, is a certified public accountant and partner with Kerber, Eck, and Brakel in Springfield, Illinois. And their daughter, Carrie, and her husband, Justin Gardner, live in Edwardsville with their two children. And that's just one of the families, the Martin family from downstate. Let's see if we can find another one. Farmer Jim Rapp, who said, I've never worked a day in my life. And he operates a farm near Princeton, Illinois, with his wife, Nancy. And his quote is, when you do what you love, it's not work. And from playing with tractors under his mom's kitchen table to renting his first piece of ground 2 weeks after high school graduation, Jim is a self-declared farm junkie. And today, Jim has three passions, his family, his farm, and promoting Illinois agriculture. Let me see who else I can find here on the list that we can talk about this morning. Daryl Sarf, he farms near Chandlersville, Illinois. Every instance of his life's work goes back to the land, from growing specialty crops in the sandy soils of Mason County to helping folks hunt the Illinois River Flyway, to managing a farm real estate business. He and his wife, Roseanne, marriage and farm partner since 1970, say their farm is not unique in the area, but is unique to the Midwest. And you'll read the story of all of these farmers in Prairie Farmer magazine as they are published over the next month or so. Some of them already in the magazine. So, again, congratulations to Max. He's been my partner for 42 years on WGN Radio in Chicago. Delighted to see Max getting that honor. Now, let me talk about another event that's coming up. As you know, I've been involved with the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Program since back in the 70s, when it was really founded and started by Joyce Watson, who served as the director of the Illinois Ag Leadership Foundation for many years. Well, coming up on March 23rd, the current class of 2016 will be graduating at activities in Chicago. They'll hold their graduation service, and they'll also take a boat cruise on Lake Michigan. They'll have the graduation ceremony at Harry Carey's in downtown Chicago, and end the day with the dinner cruise on Lake Michigan aboard the Odyssey cruise ship. So you're invited. It's open to the public. The noon luncheon and graduation will cost $39 a person. The boat cruise and the dinner, $89 per person. And that's at the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Foundation. They're headquartered in Bloomington, Illinois, and this is the earliest we have ever graduated a class. Normally, graduation takes place in the summertime, but that's not the case this year. And one of the reasons is a highlight of the two-year leadership program is an international trip. And for 2 weeks, they'll be traveling internationally to take a look at global aspects of agriculture beyond the borders of the United States. Because as we have pointed out so many times, 95% of the world's population lives outside the borders of the United States. And that means we have to look to those countries, those markets, as markets for the agricultural products that we produce here in this country. Simply cannot consume everything that we produce on the fields of the United States, and so it's important that we know all we can about the global agriculture and the needs of other people. So congratulations to the class who will be graduating later this month, and we wish them well. We hope they took the training provided by the foundation and will apply it to leadership, whether it be in churches in the country or in school boards or in cooperatives. Or many of our graduates have gone on to serve in Congress and the state legislature, thanks to what they learned in the Agricultural Leadership Foundation program. So coming up, Illinois Ag Leadership graduation on March 23rd, and we hope you can make it there. I will not be able to make it there because I'm a hostage in Arizona. Because of leg problems that started a year ago and that we have treated with the doctors at Mayo, the recovery is much slower than I thought, and it's taking forever. And if you can imagine someone being frustrated by the fact that, no, the doctors say you can't fly until this leg is healed. And so I'll not be able to attend the graduation, but I will be there in spirit and certainly wish you all well. Stand by, coming up with news here on the Saturday Morning Show. And have a good Saturday, Mr. Badish. And a lot of other people are having a pretty good Saturday if their basketball team won in tournament play, or if they attended the annual meeting of the National Pork Producers Council held this past week in Kansas City, because the council elected new officers and members to its board of directors at its annual meeting. The new president of the National Pork Producers Council, Jim Heimerl of Johnstown, Ohio. He and his wife, Kathy, along with three sons and a daughter-in-law, run three farrow to finish farms in Ohio, and they own 80 contract finishing farms in several states. Heimerl Farms LTD also consists of crops and cattle, as well as a trucking division and feed mill. Among other positions, Heimerl previously served as president of the Ohio Pork Council and as a board member of the Ohio Soybean Association. David Herring, a hog farmer from Lillington, North Carolina, was elevated to president-elect of the organization. Herring is vice president of Hog Slat, which supplies equipment to pork operations and TDM farms. He and his two brothers started in the farm in 1983 as a feeder pig operation. Howard Roth, a hog farmer from Waseca, Wisconsin, chosen as vice president, a fifth-generation farmer. He owns and operates Roth feeder pigs, and in addition to serving on the NPPC board for the past 6 years, he previously served on the Wisconsin Pork Association board of directors and currently serves as chairman of the association's Swine Health Committee. Oh, and one final word on Ken Mashoff, because he is now retired as president of the National Pork Producers Council and chairman of Mashoff Family Foods and co-owner and chairman of the Mashoffs, the third largest pork producer in the United States. And he now is NPPC immediate past president and chairman of the organization's Trade Policy Committee. Again, for any organization to succeed, it takes volunteer work and it takes time to be president of a major national agricultural organization. So you might say thank you to these people for taking time away from their business, their daily chores, to also serve the industry that has served them well. So congratulations to the pork producers. And do want to send out also congratulations to Jill Apple. She's a pork producer from Altoona, Illinois, this week inducted into the Hall of Fame of the National Pork Producers Council for her leadership of and dedication to the U.S. pork industry. She grew up not too far from Chicago. Early on, developed an interest in agriculture, and her career in the pork industry began when she joined the Knox County, Illinois Pork Producers Association, which eventually led to her role as president of the Illinois Pork Producers Association. Knox County must produce pretty good people in the pork industry. There was another well-known pork producer from Knox County. His name, John Block, who served as Secretary of Agriculture. But anyway, congratulations to Jill for that. Coming up on 20 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And time to say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, continuing the decade-long tradition of Samuelson Says, my opinions, biases, and prejudices. You don't have to agree, but I hope you'll at least listen. As we talk now about support from a surprising source for genetically modified organisms. Who is supporting GMOs? That's coming up. It's that time of year again, time to tackle some difficult tasks like cleaning those appliances, and you don't want to forget your most treasured appliance, the coffee maker. Wink Products Coffee Maker Cleaner is the perfect cleaning solution to remove those nasty mineral deposits that make coffee taste metallic and cause your coffee maker to clog. So pick up Wink Coffee Maker Cleaner today and see what a difference it makes. Learn more at WHINK.com. This person, well known in the scientific community, a few days ago issued a statement and a press release calling GMOs perfectly healthy. Who would say that? Well, it was said last Tuesday in a Reddit Ask Me Anything thread. And the person who asked the question, Bill Gates, calling genetically modified organisms perfectly healthy. Gates also said he saw the breeding techniques as an important tool in the fight to end world hunger and malnutrition. Now, though it may seem controversial, Gates' stance is in line with that of most scientists who study GMOs and who we talked about this week on National Farm Report. Bill Gates has a message for those people advocating against genetically modified organisms. The message? I'm disappointed. In that Ask Me Anything thread on Tuesday, Gates said that not only does he view genetically modified foods as perfectly healthy, but that he sees them as a promising tool in a wider array of resources in the fight to reduce world hunger. Gates wrote, and I quote, GMO foods are perfectly healthy, and the technique has the possibility to reduce starvation and malnutrition when it is reviewed in the right way. He wrote, I don't stay away from non-GMO foods, but it is disappointing that people view it as better. Now, Gates' view may strike some as controversial, as many people think that genetically modified foods are dangerous. But in recent years, companies have submitted more than 43,000 products to the Non-GMO Project. That's an organization that certifies products that don't contain genetically modified ingredients, and sales of such products are skyrocketing. Today, they represent more than $22 billion in yearly sales. But the stance that Mr. Gates is taking pretty much in line with that of most scientists who study the topic. That's Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. And at 17 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, time to talk markets. Steve Bridge sat in for me this week on our television show, This Week in Agribusiness, and Steve had the opportunity to talk markets with Greg Rowe, who visits with us often throughout the year on our television show as well as on the Saturday morning show. So stand by. That happens when we continue here on the Saturday morning show.
Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services. And Greg, as you heard Gordon Stoner lay it out there for the wheat industry here across the nation, there's some headwinds coming right now for that commodity. How do you see those wheat growers and wheat sellers trying to make sense of the market moving forward?
Well, the real issue that's come up in wheat has been the tremendous growth in production capabilities in Eastern Europe, specifically Russia. And they have become a massive competitor. When you think back 20, 30 years, they had a lot of issues just taking care of themselves. And now with the changes that have occurred and privatization that's occurred across that region and higher productivity, the use of better inputs and technology, they're a formidable competitor, and that's been the biggest problem with our ability to be competitive in the wheat market.
When we look at the weather map right now, what do you see as winter wheat conditions and what those producers will be looking like for yields?
Some of the worst conditions we've seen starting out in many years, and that's been a concern, and you've seen the wheat market move off of the bottom here despite some of the slowness in trade. And I think there is concern about this year's yield. We'll see how things go. We need some moisture here in March to turn things around a little bit, and right now it still looks a little dry in that area.
Sometimes we can use wheat to feed livestock. Does the wheat price have any impact right now on what's going on with these other commodities?
If wheat would rise too much here against corn, it would probably push itself out. But, the other part of that is that poor wheat pasture conditions right now may be forcing some cattle a little closer or a little sooner into feedlots than normal because of poor conditions in some of that area right now.
On the livestock side of things, those beef producers, they've looked at so far a pretty good year in the past, but are they looking forward to what 2018 might bring them?
I think 2018 is going to be a bit of a year that's going to be a little difficult for a lot of people to sort through, in that we're going to see an increase in production. We've had placements in the feedlots up for 6, 7, 8 months in a row. So cattle supplies are building. On the positive side, we've had a very good growth in demand over the last year. Export markets have been strong. The weakness in the dollar has helped that a little bit. Feedlots operators are keeping very current. The demand side, meat-based proteins around the globe are strong, and I think that's helping to offset what's going to be a pretty good jump in supplies going into the summer. We will have a summer drawdown or a doldrums type of a situation after spring demand gets past us, but I don't think we're going to see a real train wreck in the cattle business this year. We do have supplies that are going to be with us and maybe a bit burdensome, but I'm pretty optimistic about the demand side right now.
A couple of things there that we're really focused on, the global picture, wheat being a global commodity and the livestock trade internationally. Does the dollar have a play in either of those two markets right now?
I think the dollar is part of us, of all of this right now. I think the global trade in meat has benefited by the weaker dollar in the last few months, and certainly that may help play into the wheat market a little bit. But the wheat markets, it's all going to be weather-based, and it's going to be a lot of what happens in the new crops coming this next marketing year in Eastern Europe.
Boy, everybody's just been seeing that soybean market on a roll here over the last couple of weeks. It's a welcome sight for everybody. I think now we just want to try to figure out how long that rally might be able to last.
It's been a nice change of pace, and it tells you how quickly things can turn. With Argentina, the world's largest exporter of soybean oil and soybean meal products, a little bit of a problem there and an upset in yield projections sure turn the market around. And as they say, a rising tide kind of lifts all boats. And I think that's helped spill over to the corn market a little bit, the DDG market, as soybean meal prices have risen pretty dramatically.
How long might it be able to last, all that premium being built into the market on the dryness in Argentina?
It's going to be interesting to see. We need some rains here in March to steady up yield potential for Argentina, despite the declines. A lot of people have brought that crop size down closer to 46 or 47 million metric tons versus the current USDA projection of 52. It could get lower. If March turns out as dry as February was, yield potential is coming down, and this market may have some legs until we get a sense for how many acres we're going to have here in the U.S. and what our growing season looks like.
Are we buying acres right now, speaking of them, here in the U.S. with this price battle?
The corn bean ratio would suggest at 2.6 or better that we're buying some bean acres. But boy, last year a lot of guys had some pretty phenomenal corn yields in light of an uneven growing season. And it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. A lot of guys love that yield from corn. So USDA is projecting corn and bean acres to be about equal this year. We'll have to see how it plays out.
For right now, that might be where it settles out. We'll have to focus in on what spring weather here in the U.S. gives us before we know more.
I think so. I think the soybean market especially will be very sensitive to the acres and to how this weather starts to look here for North America this year. And while we probably will see a pullback in the market as planting gets underway and we get a better sense for those acres, I would imagine the volatility is going to continue. We'll see some wild swings based on rain potential down there in early March. But I think the market's going to have to see where we go this spring before it really takes much of a tumble.
Soybean farmers, producers, those holding, should we be selling into this rally?
Well, I think that's been a great opportunity considering where we were at the end of the year and the dismal price projections that were in place. This has been a good rally, over a dollar, or about a dollar in beans, and now maybe 25, 30 cents in corn. Producers have taken advantage of this. The funds started out the year with big short positions. The market rallied as they started to cover those positions. The farmer has sold into that rally, so now the speculative community owns the market, and the farmer has done a good job of pricing something on the rally here.
Something for the farmer to focus on before they really go with planting here in a couple more weeks.
Definitely. I think as we start to look at where we ended the month of February, setting our price insurance levels for the insurance program this year, we have a pretty good incentive to keep these acres up. And so if we have these acres and we have favorable yields again, we'll probably see some good market pressures again building by late summer and fall. So I encourage producers to take advantage of these rallies as they come and move some good marketing opportunities.
Thank you very much for the visit about the markets. Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services.
It's 5 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio, and it'll be interesting to see if the week ahead will be as traumatic as the week just ending for trade advocates here in the U.S. President Trump, after shocking markets with the risk of a global trade war, came under intense pressure yesterday from U.S. business interests and foreign trading partners to moderate his threat to slap tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. You know, we've been talking over the decades about NAFTA having strong agricultural trade implications, but it goes beyond agriculture. It goes to ingredients made in automobiles around the world. And so yesterday, the president sent pro-tariff advisors Wilbur Ross and Peter Navarro to TV news studios to defend his plans, while White House aides scrambled to downplay the prospect of a resignation by free trade advocate Gary Cohn. He is the top White House economic advisor over the matter. And Cohn is part of a faction in Trump's administration that warned the Republican president for months not to threaten the 25% steel and 10% aluminum tariffs that he pledged to impose in that announcement on Thursday. And then, of course, there's the meeting that we had talked about being on the schedule for the past couple of weeks, and it happened. It puts big oil against big corn, and those are two of the voting blocks that certainly supported Trump in his run for the presidency. So going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Incidentally, one of the best quotes I saw this week came from the president of the National Corn Growers Association, a North Dakota farmer, Kevin Skunas. And in response to the White House meeting on the renewable fuel standard, this is what he had to say. For corn farmers, the question for the ongoing White House discussions is simple. What is the problem you are trying to solve? He said, according to EPA, refiners don't have a problem. EPA concluded in November that refiners are able to recover the cost of the RIN through the prices they receive for refined products and that RIN values are not causing economic harm to refiners. For farmers, ethanol blending equals corn demand. Farmers care about RIN values not because we want them to be high, but because we want the market mechanism to work freely to increase blending. Increased blending will, in turn, lower RIN values exactly the way the RFS is intended to work. Government manipulation of the RIN market, on the other hand, disrupts the incentive to blend. Oh, the interesting things that happen if you're sitting in the White House. Well, yesterday when we ended the trading session, March wheat was down 14 and a quarter cents a bushel. March corn ended down 2 and a quarter cents. March soybeans ended higher, up 4 and 3 quarter cents a bushel. And in livestock futures yesterday, the June lean hog contract down 42 cents a hundredweight, ending the week at $79.75. The June live cattle contract ended down $1.12 a hundredweight yesterday at $114.40. And the April feeder cattle contract traded lower, and that was down $1.47 a hundredweight at $143.67. Well, as always, we appreciate your company. I appreciate the help of Bob Ferguson, who twirls the dials back at WGN Radio in Chicago. But we appreciate your joining us here every Saturday morning as we cover the world of agriculture here on WGN Radio. Have a great week. The National Farmers Union will be holding its 116th annual convention, and that will take place in Kansas City this week, starting on Monday. You're listening to Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.